Chapter 28 Lunar Surface. Gordon shuffled along the avenue, the same gait he always used, magnified by the bulk of his suit. Andrews kept overstepping and bouncing himself into the air. He came down hard on his feet again and staggered into the wall.
"Take it easy," Gordon told him. "Save your energy."
"Sorry. It's always like this for me. I spend almost all my time in 0G or 1G. Whenever I have a layover here, it always messes me up."
"Then try real hard not to be messed up for the next 2 hours or so."
A secondary lock sealed behind them. 30 meters later, Tereshkova split, with each fork locked behind double doors. Gordon ignored the one leading to the landing pad. The other door had faint lines of dust on it. The hallway beyond it had never even been completed. An avenue to a lunar space elevator which became just another unfinished Discorp project after a few years.
"We're here," Gordon said.
"I know," Tessa answered. "I can see you on the cameras."
The doors slid apart. The hallway only extended a few meters before ending at another, heavier set of doors. Gordon and Andrews stepped through and were sealed in again. A minute ticked by on Gordon's heads-up display. He cleared his throat.
"What's the holdup?"
"One second," said Tessa's voice. "I'm removing the air from the hallway. We don't want the pressure to kick you halfway to the launch pad when I open the door."
"Fair enough."
"I'm okay with that," said Andrews.
A low chime came over the speakers, followed by a few faint key taps.
"Are you ready? Here we go."
The doors slid open. A dead woman glared at them. Just beyond her stood a tall man in a long coat and a small child in a frilly dress. Andrews hopped back out of Gordon's field of vision and crashed into something. Gordon brought his fists up, then remembered the baseball bat hanging on his tool belt. He reached, found it, fumbled with the release. The dead woman stood there, arms at her side, gazing forward. Frost crystals studded her shrunken eyes. Her brown hair darkened to black on one side. Her blue and green jumper had burned open at the shoulder, revealing charred skin and muscle. Gordon kept his free hand up. He slowly released the baseball bat. It swung down, still attached to his belt, and thudded against his leg. No movement. He spared a glance at the wrist seals of his suit, then reached out to poke the dead woman. She rocked back and forth, swaying in the lunar gravity. Gordon reached out again, put a hand just above the woman's breast, her hard, frozen breast, he couldn't help but notice, and shoved. The zombie tilted back, her feet left the ground, her heels swung up, and she silently crashed to the ground in front of the dead child. Gordon turned to the pilot. Andrews had pressed himself against the wall of the hallway, just on the other side of the hatch. Not pressed flat, not trying to hide, but not far from it. Steam and condensation covered the bottom half of his visor.
"You gonna be okay?"
Andrews nodded.
"Yeah," he panted. "Yeah, I'm fine. Really wish I had one of those baseball bats, though."
"You scare easy?"
"They wouldn't let me pilot a carrier if I did."
He pushed himself away from the wall and tried to wipe his helmet clear from the outside. Gordon studied him.
"You scare easy out of the cockpit?"
The other man straightened up.
"Guess we're finding out."
"At least you're honest."
They moved around the fallen woman, past the tall man and the dead little girl, to the edge of the avenue. Gordon stepped down and bounced lightly off the bare lunacrete slab. Andrews landed next to him. Three more zombies stood here. One, a dark-skinned, bald woman with a gash through one eye, wore a Discorp flight suit splattered with blood. The other two both had dark coats and ties, stark black against their ice-white flesh.
"Kind of weird, isn't it? Someone getting buried in their flight suit?"
"Wouldn't know," said Gordon. He pushed one of the dead men aside and lumbered past. "I'm not a caretaker."
"Sorry."
"Besides, I don't think she was ever buried. Probably came out of the Goddard wreck.
Oh.
They stepped off the slab and onto the ground. The regolith crunched under Gordon's boots, the sound seeping up inside his suit. His floodlights came on, lighting up an oval of landscape ahead of him. And almost a dozen zombies. He reached down and grabbed the baseball bat again. This time it slid off the connector with no problem.
Do you know her?
I don't think so, said Andrews.
Figured all you pilots and crew would know each other.
There's over 600 of us spread across the four elevators, and that's just the civilian flights. I barely know all the people working on whatever elevator I'm flying off.
Really?
Yeah. It's a tight community, but it's a big one. We all talk on a few different... You're just making me talk to help me stay calm.
Maybe, said Gordon, stepping around a dead man in a deep red caftan. Works with hysterical kids. Thought it might work for you, too.
Thanks, grumbled the pilot.
Yeah, getting pissed will do it, too.
Their floodlights picked out even more zombies standing at attention. Gordon checked the map on his heads-up display, hefted his bat, and guided them along. The floodlights from Andrews's suit hit Gordon in the back, spreading the sheriff's shadow across the zombies in front of him. A ghost of movement flickered across them. His gloves tightened on the baseball bat each time. When he'd been a kid, his dad had taken them to a farm on the edge of town for a corn maze, hundreds of straight green stalks that somehow formed walls and paths. The stalks also hid local teens in masks and makeup who'd jump out and shriek and set hearts racing. Moving through the crowd of zombies felt like that. He reached out with the baseball bat and shoved another one over, and the next one too. It set off a minor domino effect, knocking down three more dead people.
"How much longer?" asked Andrews.
"We're maybe halfway." Gordon turned his shoulders, panning his lights out into the lunar darkness. He double-checked the map. "This way, I think."
"You think?"
"You want to split up? Just wander off that way alone and yell if you find anything?"
"No."
"Good. This way."
They passed a dead man with white hair and crumbling, frozen skin. A dead woman with a ragged braid and tight lips that showed off her ivory teeth. A dead teen in a dark blue dress that went to her wrists and ankles. A small, shrouded child, gaunt and desiccated from years in the lunar soil. All of them stood straight-backed with arms at their sides, like soldiers at attention, awaiting new orders.
"Pleasant thought," Gordon muttered.
"What was that?"
"Nothing."
He put one hand on the child's head, pushed. The boy spun and bounced away, vanishing into the dark. They plodded around a piece of charred wreckage Andrews identified as part of a carrier's external framework, and another one that looked like a row of three seats with all the upholstery and padding burned off. Then more zombies. Then a large hatch with twisted hinges trailing scraps of white metal. The space between zombies grew to 3 meters, then 4, and then something large, long, and skeletal loomed up on the edge of the floodlights.
"Think we're here," Gordon said.
"Excellent," said Andrews. "Now I get to feel useful."
"That's the hope, yeah."
They trudged the last few minutes to the carrier, shoving over a few more zombies as they went. Gordon had never been outside one of the ships before. He knew they were large, but it was still bigger than he expected. The airlock panel sprang to life at his touch and flashed an angry red warning. Gordon pulled up some codes and authorizations on his tab, flicked them over, and the panel changed to a welcoming green. He touched the door controls again. The hatch pushed out and slid to the side. He leaned in and checked the small entryway.
"Want me to take the lead?" Andrews asked.
"Sure."
Andrews lumbered through the hatch. The pilot turned sideways to squeeze around a corner. He beckoned Gordon to follow him.
"It's a weird airlock," said Gordon.
It's not an airlock. It's just a hatch. Andrews gestured around them. This is a carrier. Nobody gets off in mid-flight to go for a spacewalk or something. Crap.
What?
They lock the cockpit door, too. Can you do your passcodes again?
The two men shuffled their spacesuits back and forth in the narrow hall until they'd switched positions. Gordon threw some more authorizations at the panel. It considered them for a few seconds, then shifted to green. This time the hatch just slid to the side, vanishing into the wall.
"Go on in," said Andrews. "Should be room for both of us in the cockpit."
Gordon turned and twisted through the narrow opening. His suit's pack banged twice on the doorframe. His boot caught on the lower edge and he stumbled into the cockpit. The low gravity gave him enough time to reach out, grab a seat back, and pull himself back to his feet.
"You okay?"
Andrews asked. Gordon bit back his first reply.
"Fine."
Andrews wiggled in behind him. The pilot sidestepped over to the other chair, stretched, leaned, and ended up wedging himself between the flight chair and the console.
"Okay, this looks like a lot of basic security settings. If you can unlock this, we can get the hell out of here."
Gordon's finger paused above his tab.
"Say what?"
Andrews didn't turn from the console.
"I mean, we can get everything prepped so you can get that thing, the rock, out of here."
His fingers tapped the edges of the panel. Gordon reached out and set a hand on the other man's shoulder. He squeezed and felt the air-filled material give way until he touched flesh and bone.
"We're clear on what you're doing, yeah?"
The pilot's head went up and down inside his helmet.
"Yep."
"And that is?"
"Prepping the ship. So if you could just unlock the controls."
Gordon squeezed again, harder.
"Let me hear you say that again."
The fingers tapped a little more on the console.
"Look," Andrews said, "I get it. You're the sheriff of the moon and all that. You've got responsibilities. But we're here. We can leave right now and get picked up by another carrier."
"This your plan all along?"
"What plan? There are monsters everywhere, and we're standing in a carrier that can take us away. This is common sense. We can go get help."
"Okay," said Gordon. "Let me be really clear what's going to happen here."
He kept his grip on the man's shoulder, reached down and freed the baseball bat with his other hand, lifted it up, made sure Andrews saw it.
"You're going to get this ship prepped, and that's it. We're not leaving. We're not going anywhere. Not until the rock's on board, and then you can send it into the sun, and go with it for all I care."
"Do you not understand what's going on? This is our chance to—"
"If I feel this ship move," continued Gordon, "if it does anything more than shake a little bit, I'm going to take this bat and smash your helmet wide open. If you're real lucky, I might break it with one hit and you won't have a lot of time to panic or suffer."
Andrews stopped tapping his fingers.
"That's murder."
"Yeah," Gordon said. "Probably, but I'm betting with all this other shit going on, nobody's going to notice one more body."
The pilot flexed his fingers once, twice. Inside his helmet, his head shifted just enough to meet Gordon's eyes.
"So let's pretend this whole moment didn't happen," Gordon said. "I'm going to unlock the controls, you prep the ship, I'll stand here and watch, and then we'll both go back to help get the vault loaded on board."
"I still think we—"
"And to help you focus, I'll be keeping this bat up and ready to swing at your head."
They stared at each other.
"So," Gordon said, "are we clear what's happening here?"
Andrews looked away and set his fingers back on the panel.
"Yeah," he said.
"Very clear?"
"Yes. Yes, we are."
Gordon stared at the side of the man's face.
"Okay, then."
He raised his other arm and flicked his codes over to the console.
"Get to it.